Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
There's no job too big or too small, and you got to treat every job like it's your Super Bowl. And with that, you're going to gain more trust.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Andrew Kobian, former NBA G League coach and Division I assistant. Kobian has built his career through stops at NYIT, Pace, Hofstra, the Long Island Nets, and Loyola Chicago, gaining experience across both the college and professional levels. His path reflects steady growth and the ability to adapt in different environments. In this episode, we discuss his unique journey to landing a role with the Long Island Nets, what working in the NBA taught him about what truly drives player improvement compared to the college game, and effective ways coaches can build trust and respect with their players.
Welcome, everyone. Another episode to Chat It Up from the Rising Coaches podcast. Your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined alongside a former, not only Division I and G League, worked in the NBA assistant, formerly with Loyola Chicago, as well as the Long Island Nets. You got some great stories, and I know we're going to have some energy on this one. We have Andrew Kobian. Coach Kobian, welcome to the podcast.
Guys, thanks so much for having me. This is what you guys are doing is great. I look forward to these. When these pop up on my Instagram and Twitter, I'm completely dialed in. And I think for us, this is what's important. Talking shop, giving back to coaches at all levels. Like, really love what you guys are doing. Honored to be on this and excited to get going.
We appreciate you taking time to join us, man. Me and Doug feel the same way. It's a chance for us to give back, but don't get it twisted. We're the biggest hijackers in the business. So when people come on and share their wisdom, it's been great for us. But excited to have you, man.
Thanks, guys.
And I want to make sure to give you your flowers, because before we had our podcast, you ran the Coaches and Coffee podcast. Man. Now, I know that's been years ago, but yeah. I will say that popped up on my social media all the time. And I had no idea it was you until Mage texted me. He goes, "Hey, we got Andrew for the podcast." I'm like, "Great." I started doing the research. I'm like, "Oh, okay. I know exactly who this is."
So, wow, I didn't even know that was going to come up. That's pretty cool. Quick little ad lib on that. I used that as my thesis for my master's degree. And it was great when I was at Pace University. Got my master's in a year, took the job at Hofstra as a video guy. And I was like, I got to finish this school. I'm so close. So what I did was use that to really network organically. It was cool. My master's is in media and communication. So it was just trying to just figure it out and get creative. And it was a lot, though. So I give you guys so much credit. I was recording on my iPhone at the time, calling from the office phone. If Coach walked in, I'd have to say, "Pause real quick. Give me that game. I got you." And then
right.
It was just too funny. Again, it's all part of the story and the process. So appreciate you doing your homework with that, guys.
That's all Doug, man. I can't take credit for that, man. Doug's the PI with this deal in terms of research. He can, if you got stuff going on, he can dig it. He's a bloodhound.
Oh, no. We got to make sure, especially if we're talking with you, we want to make sure to be able to give out the greatest information that we can. But nonetheless, appreciate you for being on here. And just going into things, I know I mentioned really quickly about two spots of your background, but you've been in some great institutions. I know you've worked your way up the chain, ultimately being in a Division I, the NBA level, but obviously there were a lot of stops in the beginning as well. Working your way up, okay, we're just going to start there. From going from the beginning, we'll say New York Institute, what were some of the things that you did behind the scenes to really help propel yourself? Because I feel like that's the question that everybody asks is, how do I get to the situation, the roles that you were in at the University of Chicago, the Long Island Nets? How do I get to those types? You got to start somewhere. So what were some of the best things that you feel you did early in your career that really helped be noticed by other coaches and help you propel?
I think for me, the most important thing is availability, right? Like, when I took that job at New York Tech, I was 22 years old, fresh out of college. I was coaching guys who were 24, 25 years old. Those Division II schools, you're getting creative and you're just trying to figure it out. And for me, you just got to be ready to go whenever. How can I take anything off my head coach's plate, big or small, and allow him to focus on the big picture. And you're never going to lose that. Like when I was in the G League, you're trying to get your head coach to be aligned with the front office, focus on game planning strategy and what his core foundations are for the culture he's trying to institute, along with being parallel with the Brooklyn Nets culture. So for me, it's never going to change. How can I be available? There's no job too big or too small. And you got to treat every job like it's your Super Bowl. And with that, you're going to gain more trust. Everything, whether we like it or not, is being evaluated. So if you're being evaluated on, if you're driving the van for a game in Bridgeport and it's got a quarter of a tank instead of a full tank, why didn't we do that? And if it's your scout, is the spelling correct on the scouting report for the personnel? Literally everything matters. And it's funny because I worked so many crazy jobs when I first started off. So the fact that I was able to just coach and that be my full-time job, life is good. I used to fold towels at 4:30 in the morning at New York Sports Club. And again, I was a volunteer, so I had to make a couple bucks. Then my coach at the time was part-time. He was a teacher. So I had the freedom from 10 a.m. to when practice started at 3:30 to run with it. Am I in the gym shooting with guys? I wanted to be available and ready. I wanted to have that sweat equity with the guys. So I was doing that. And then after practice, I would go bust tables at a bowling alley / restaurant from 7:30 to midnight. And if I wasn't dragging my feet, I got home at 12:31 and just rinse and repeat. I did that for 4 years. But that window of coaching with the guys allowed me to grow in my role, allowed me to develop a coaching voice, and it also gained my trust from my head coach. If he had to go recruiting, one time he threw me practice and I was able to run practice. I think that it all comes into play where you just got to be ready and available. You can't have an ego. You've got to be able to make the bag lunches as well as deliver the pregame scout and whatnot. And I think that's what makes this all so much fun. And if you don't lose sight of that, I've been very fortunate to be around some really good coaches that allowed me to grow no matter what role, gave me more responsibility. And I think that's how I was able to climb. Now, it took some time and you can't lose sight of the big picture. But I think that when you build it from the ground up, there's no better way.
Yeah, no doubt, man. We're constantly in our profession battling two things. One is the comparison deal, which obviously we know comparison's the thief of joy. And social media doesn't help that, right? Because you look on there and guys are posting wearing a new polo and whatever it is. And so we're constantly battling that. But then obviously in our profession, we're battling the delayed gratification. So those are really the two enemies that as coaches, those enemies are always on the schedule. You got 32 teams maybe that you're trying to beat.
Every morning, like, every night.
Those two teams are on the schedule every single day. Home, road, neutral site, it doesn't matter. Like, they are there. And I'm so glad you shared just the idea of doing whatever and that willingness to do whatever. Mm-hmm. Because, again, there's nothing better when you're a head coach to see somebody that's just around every day. And I'm not saying they got to be in the facility till midnight. That's not the point.
Yeah.
But just that willingness to, like, how can I help? And how many people can you get in the building that have that mentality of how can I help? And the more you have that internally and in the office, then eventually you'll get guys like that on the floor.
Yeah.
And you get guys on that. Now your defense is thinking, how can I help? Mm. And then your offense is thinking, how can I help by sharing it? And so it bleeds.
All that stuff is contagious, the good or the bad. If you're pouring into the good side every day, no matter what, I think people have no choice but to get on the bus and keep rolling because it's leaving no matter what. We're on a mission. It's leaving no matter what. So you're in or out.
No, you got to try to overwhelm your building with unselfishness.
Absolutely.
That's literally what you have to try to do.
I love that it took, and you mentioned it took you 4 years to be able to be waking up at 4:30 in the morning, folding towels and get it growing. And it wasn't just like a 1 year thing. And I think that's something that people necessarily just a lot of people who end up going and being in the positions, like there's a lot of people who would aspire to be in the positions that you have been in. We'll just say that. Right. Yeah. And then to see the resilience that it went and where it started. I really think that's the stuff that people don't talk about enough, because everybody always says, oh yeah, I came from nothing. And don't get me wrong, those are great. But at the same point, It's like, they don't talk about exactly where they came from specifically. And to hear mm-hmm. that type of story, I think that gives, at least for me, it tells a lot of people that there's hope. You just got to keep going. It took 4 years.
Yeah.
And you know what? Those things may never end, but this game is going to test you. And you got to keep punching. You got to keep swinging, because we're preaching that to the guys. You got to practice what you preach. When I was these G League contracts in some situations are only 6 months. You're lucky if you get a year contract. So my time with the Nets, I was commuting from Long Island at the time to get to the practice facility. And they said basically my first summer with them, hey, if you're around, you could come up. Basically left it open ended, no pressure. And I'm like, I'm going to be there regardless.
Yeah. So, yeah, what do you mean if?
And if you guys know New York, it could take you 45 minutes to go a mile. So you talk about riding the bike and getting chased down by the dogs, you might as well walk. Right. Like when I was there, it was basically trying to be available, right? So what I did was, and again, hopefully we're good, Brooklyn Nets. I appreciate you guys letting me do this. But I used to a lot of times crash in the back room. And that commute was killing me. I didn't have gas money. I wasn't getting paid in that window, but I had to be there. So what I would do was go back. I'd work out. Everyone would leave. I'd go back there and wake up. The cooks would wake me up as they were coming in at 5:30 in the morning. I'd pop up real quick, get my bags, start working out. But I wanted to be there every day. And I wanted to work in front of those guys. And I felt with all the changes that went on during my time there, I was able to be there for 3 seasons. And they were great. And I think that, again, back to you got to be willing to do anything and everything to be available and be there. And then once you get there, you got to run with the opportunity, because you may only get it once, one time to pass the test. And if you don't, again, it's on to the next.
Yeah. No, what we do is so similar. A friend of mine was asking me about coaching and what was going on with me. And I said, our deal is as close to acting as you can get, because actors, you don't get to choose when your opportunities come. Yeah. Like you can be an engineer and say, in 3 years, I want to work in Seattle. And you can do exactly that.
Yeah.
Because Seattle's always going to need an engineer. But we don't get to pick and choose, right? It's like an actor. You could be you bussing tables, right? And all of a sudden, here you get an audition. All right. Yeah. You got to be over at Paramount at 9:30 the next morning, and you got to read these 2 pages for this supporting role in this miniseries. And that's the Super Bowl. Like you said, that 9:30 deal, what happens is 5 years later, you see this person starring on something in Apple TV, but mm-hmm. you never know that they started from this bussing tables and getting the supporting role in a miniseries. So you don't get to really pick and choose when the opportunities come. You literally got to snatch them by the throat, not knowing what's on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest challenge, I think, especially as young coaches that decide in our business, do I really want to do this? Do I not? And that weighing and measuring is fine. But then once you decide, then both feet, both hands, full blown cannonball into the deep end, all in.
And I would say, we're not advising people to fall asleep where they work and stay there overnight. But if you're allowed and not going to get arrested from it, okay, then you know what? It's fine. But
No, listen. It's like, I don't know if you guys are Seinfeld fans. This guy Costanza never leaves. He had his car in the parking lot the
whole
time.
That's right. Yankee Stadium. That's right.
I was just channeling my inner Seinfeld right there. But
that's
like, you hear all these stories from these successful coaches, and you're just trying to figure out a way to do anything you can to help yourself be successful and put yourself in those right positions.
Well, let's talk about.
Oh, go ahead, Doug.
I was going to say, because I know you mentioned to us that you have a unique story of how you got with the Nets. So,
Gotta hear this. Free.
We're going to roll with it. And this is a great lesson. And it was a lesson for myself, too, because you never know who's watching. Never know who's watching. And I was going through, not to get too personal, a little challenging time. I had lost my father, and I was working at Hofstra, and I was part-time. But you treat it like a full-time role. I was a video coordinator. And I get a text from our good friend, everyone knows him, Jimmy Oakman, who's a beast and always trying to help people out and paying it forward. And I'm picking his brain about trying to break into the pro side. And he's, hey, you want to come down to this local tryout? Okay, cool. Go down to LIU Brooklyn. And I'm like, whatever you need me to do, I'll do. And you know how the local tryout can get at times. You could have some talented players. You could also have the mailman who just wants the jersey and shorts to say he did it.
Right.
So I'm running a ball handling station. And just naturally, I'm sweating with the guys. I'm, as you could tell, I got some juices in me. So I'm just like flying around, treating it like this is like game seven, right? And I see these two guys circling my station. And I didn't really know what was going on. I'm just sitting there doing it. And we do it for an hour. And they go, what are you doing tomorrow? And I go, nothing. They go, you want to come back? And I was like, sure, I'll come back. Cool. Do it again. Same thing, ball handling. Then they throw me a team when the top 10 players are playing. So I'm helping out, coaching, just trying to pick and choose my spots. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, maybe this could be something. The two guys that were circling my station end up being Adam Caporn, who is now the head coach for the Australian national team, was my first boss who gave me my first break with the Long Island Nets, and Matt Riccardi, who is now in the Dallas Mavericks front office, holding down the general manager role at this time being. And I just said, all right, I'm just going to take my shot. I said, hey, guys, I don't know what you're doing with the staff, but I'll do whatever it takes. I'll volunteer for you guys. You'll never hear me complain about money. I promise you, I'm going to treat this like a full-time job. I just want to break in. I want to help. My title was assistant video coordinator with the Long Island Nets. For the first 3 days, I thought I was volunteering. We're having our coaches retreat. And they say, if you want to present something, you can present. I said, okay, I'll present. And when I was at Hofstra, we did a zone defense, 2-3 zone for the 5 years I was there. And we were awesome at it. And I learned a lot from my 5 years there. So I said, let me be creative. Let me be unique. There's not a lot of zone in the G League and NBA level. So I did that. And after that, I thought I was walking into that presentation as a volunteer, and they offered me a full-time contract, benefits, the works, and I was like just in awe. But I say all that to say, like, all started from volunteering and doing a ball handling station that you do from when you're in high school, working your high school camps all the way up, and just took the opportunity, ran with it. And again, you just never know who's watching. You're always being evaluated. And that really changed my life. Changed my trajectory and had 3 great years, and am forever grateful for that.
Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable, man.
It's crazy.
It's amazing to see just like something so little, even though it's not little, the opportunity to be able to work that camp. I'm sure one is enough you needed right there just to get that boost. But then you see it excel and go into something that you weren't even expecting. And the big thing that I take away from that is you didn't say no for anything, right? They ask you to present. They say you can. Yes. You didn't say no to anything. You didn't turn anything away. You just took it on head on, which we always say, be prepared for the moment when the moment arrives. You were prepared for the moment when the moment arrived.
Yeah.
And look where it brought. That's awesome. That's a great story.
The thing that you said it earlier, we literally have to coach ourselves the way we coach our players. Literally.
Yeah.
Because especially in situations where you're in between or gap time and things like that, that's like being a sub. That's a 7-8-9 or an 8-9-10, maybe even a 9-10-11 guy that may not know if he's going to play or not. Typically, your 7s and 8s know they're getting in at some point, unless you play an ultra-thin rotation. But your 9-10-11s, they don't know. And those are the guys that have to stay ready for the moment that they don't know is coming.
And as a player development coach, you could really separate with those guys, because if they're showing improvement – and there's little expectation from them. They're just good roster guys, practice guys, culture guys.
Right.
That's when you could really get creative, dive in, pour into that. And again, like selfishly as a coach, separate a little bit.
And which is, so in that same vein, we have to do that to ourselves while we're waiting. So we had to coach develop ourselves the way a player development guy would player develop those 9-11 guys. Because we all want to make sure that we're ready, whatever happens to any of us next. If you're in that gap period, how can you be better when the bell rings? That's what they say in free agency all the time. Just work on your game till the phone rings.
Yeah.
That's the free agency motto right there. But I think there's a lesson there in what you said. We do literally, as coaches, we have to coach ourselves. Same things we tell our players, being ready, right? Giving something your all. no matter how little or how large that role is. Mm-hmm. I still keep getting better, right? Don't lag. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. So when we lay our heads on the pillow tonight at midnight or whatever that is, do we take a step forward or backwards? But that coach speak has got to become our personal speak, just like we do with our players, for sure.
So I want to stay along the lines of, like, you being in the NBA. Obviously, you have been around, well, and we'll say with the G League in particular, with the Long Island Nets, you've been around a lot of player development, a lot of individual development. For all of that, what did the NBA level teach you about what actually drives the player development that maybe once you got into college? So just to clarify for everybody, you went into the G League with the Nets and then ended up going into a college position after. Yeah. Did that NBA player development side teach you anything? So then when you step back into that college position, it maybe had a little light bulb, made things a little more clear for you for the development side?
Absolutely. I got to give my flowers to the three head coaches I work for with the Long Island Nets, Adam Caporn. I had mentioned him, Ronnie Burrell, who's an assistant coach with the Portland Trailblazers, and Mufani Sofia, who is with the Long Island Nets currently. So three high-level human beings to start. But player development-wise, those three guys are very different, but all so sharp. And I think the one thing I learned from all them collectively is – it's a collaborative experience with the players, right? So again, you got to be your authentic self. You got to be truthful. You got to be transparent with the guys. You got to tell them, hey, listen, your goals are my goals. It's a marriage. How can we get together, make this marriage work? And I think for me, everyone learns different. So it starts with building their trust. How can I build the foundation from the ground up? Are you someone who learns on the floor where we need to walk through it? Are you someone who learns through video? Are you someone who learns through, I'm going to draw it up on the whiteboard and you draw it back to me? You got to get really creative, because if you can't figure out how they learn, it's going to get frustrating, because there's going to be growth within that player development. There's going to be failure. You want them to fail in those increments now, so when the game comes, they're used, they've seen every read, they've seen every type of scenario, and they're used to being in the fire when the bullets are flying. So I think you have to have a collaborative experience with that. You got to build it from the ground up, and you got to have open dialogue with the players. I learned this from those three guys. Sometimes they'll give you the answers to the test when you ask them, hey, Joe Smith, what are you feeling here? What do you think we're trying to get accomplished within this session today? And they'll say, we're trying to make reads versus the low man. We're trying to finish first drop and make the right decisions in those tight windows. And they'll tell you then, you're like, yeah. And now they're taking ownership with that, right? Now they feel fully invested. So I hate to use this word, but you're kind of tricking them to be invested in their own development. I think with that, you got to have patience and you got to come correct every day. You're surrounded by arguably the top basketball minds and the top basketball talent. So for me, you have to live, breathe, and eat your players' development. They got to know that you have turned over every stone leading into every workout, that you are going to maximize this session. You're not just going to go in and say, hey, we're just going to wing it today. That's not cutting it with these guys. They want to know that you've done the work too. If they're going to do the work, you got to do the work. And you have to tell them that there's going to be some growth in this. You got to have some patience. Again, you're trying to create a shortened learning curve for them, and you do that within these small segments, and you're trying to limit the anxiety, right? A G League guy is trying to get to a two-way. A two-way guy is trying to get to a standard contract, and that's already stressful. That's already stressful. So you got to come correct with how they're going to learn and how they're going to receive the information. Some guys you got to hug up. Some guys you got to get after them with. But once you know who you're dealing with and the player and how they're going to react, I think the rest is history. So building it from the ground up, I learned from all those three guys that it's collaborative. They'll tell you, sometimes they'll give you the answers to the test and they'll make you a better coach. Hey, coach, I like this, but can we make it a little bit more realistic by tweaking this? And you're like, it's a good idea.
Let's go.
Dinner's on me tonight. You just.
No question.
You know, in one and you just, it's just what makes it fun. You're working together. So I think really doing that on the college level too, could be helpful. We have these goals and we have these structures that we want to check these boxes, right? Selfishly as coaches. But we also got to be able to adjust. If you're dealing with a unique skill set, sometimes you got to veer off of your system, adapt to their skill set, because you want to put them in the best position to be successful, right? So when those guys come down, you could have a great system, a great flow with all your standard G League guys, right? Things are rolling. Front office sends down a two-way guy. Now they need the reps. They need their own growth. They need their own confidence and experience. So now you got to tweak it a little bit. How can I create an advantage? How can I put Joe Smith, who's a two-way guy, in the best position to be successful while not losing the big picture of the rest of the crew? And I think that's what makes development in a big, greater picture so fun, so unique, so challenging, where you got to just really be able to adapt and react in those quick decision scenarios.
Yeah. Now, the word that jumped off this pod, you just said it, is collaborative. And that's, to me, and Doug works his guys out at Chatham, like, when it's a partnership, it's the most, that those are the most rewarding player development experiences I've had. And I'm probably speaking for Doug as well, because you're in the fire with them. Obviously, you're sweating with them. So there's a physical collaboration there.
Yeah.
It's not just here's your workout and you kind of stand off to the side and manager's passing and you're kind of there. But when it's a mental and an emotional partnership as well, those are the most rewarding. I never forget players, they never get enough credit for being brilliant. And Greg Oden would do this. We'd work on a footwork thing. And then 3 weeks later, he'd come back and say, "Hey, Mage, you remember that footwork thing we were doing a few weeks ago in the game the other day? I did it. And then this happened." And so then I'm like, "Damn, 3 weeks. Okay, what I say again?" He's that's how brilliant he was, though. But it made you a better coach, because you've got to do everything you can to keep improving, so you stay a couple notches ahead, right? Because you're both kind of carrying the wagon, but you have the map, you have the kind of the directions, and you're trying to provide that direction. So I'll be calling NBA guys and calling guys in Europe and just saying, "Hey, man, got some big, some post stuff for me." But that's what being around really good players does. It, and all they want to know, I don't know if you could probably answer this at the pro level, do you know what you're talking about? And can you make me get better? Can you help me get better? And if you do those two things, I think those guys don't really care if you were a manager somewhere or if you were a video guy somewhere, or sometimes they think you got to be a former player to earn their respect and that kind of thing. And that's not always the case.
Yeah. And it's funny. My first player development guy with the Nets was a guy named Chris Chioza, who's still playing. Played at Florida, was with the Warriors, won a ring, was with the Brooklyn Nets. Dude is a stud. And his last two player development coaches was Kenny Atkinson and Mike Brown. So I'm sitting there and we sat down and I say, "Hey, listen, man, things you're going to get from me, I'm going to give you my all. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm available to help you 24/7, whatever you need." And I said, "This is not going to be me telling you. We're going to learn from each other." And I said, "And to be honest, you're going to teach me a lot more than I might be able to teach you. And that's great. And we're going to grow together." And I think guys are walking into a situation, new coach, you just don't know. And then you could just see the relief. And he was able to let his hair down. And then the rest was history, because you got to be your authentic self. You got to be truthful. And also, the one thing I learned too is, if you don't have the answer, don't try and BS. Say, "Listen, that's a great question. I'm going to find out. I don't want to be wrong." Because if you start dancing around, guys, like you said, are so intelligent, they'll sniff it out. And then you're not getting another opportunity to answer his question the next time around. So you got to just be true to yourself.
No doubt.
Yeah. I've said this before on another, like, actually, it's probably been a little bit. But the one thing that I learned early is, I feel like as a young coach, I always wanted to have the answer, because when they come, you get happy, you get excited. You're like, "All right, this is my opportunity." So exactly to your point, I started learning that just say, "I don't know." If you really don't know, like, just be honest, because then it's like, okay, well, at least he didn't tell me something wrong. Because if you say something, they go out there, they do it. The head coach is now on them for yelling at them because, "Oh, he told me." And it's like, now you just completely stirred something that you don't need to get into. So just say, you know what? I don't know. Let me get that answer for you and go figure it out. There's nothing wrong with not knowing an answer. Now, you can't say that every time, but obviously at some point you have to know. But if it's something like a quick question that they ask and you're like, you know what? I don't know. Let me get that answer for you.
Absolutely.
Well, you would probably speak to this, Andrew. There, you're going to have times where you do screw up and they may look at you funny. I think the second biggest thing, and we, again, this is coaching our players like we coach ourselves and vice versa, is own it. Hey, you know what? My bad, man. Like at the time, this is what I thought or whatever it is, but just owning that. And I think that helps. I know you can, that trust and mistrust thing is delicate, especially at that level. But I think when you humanize your mistake and you own it, I think that can help you reset the situation.
That goes such a long way.
Yeah.
And that'll give you street cred too. AC's got my back. And you right. gotta say it loud and proud. Coach, that's on me. I told him to do that. Fellas, yes. that's on me.
Yes.
And then you move on. Because right. if that happens and the player's looking at you and then you're whispering, it's just between you got to own it and say, fellas, I'll take that one. I told them the wrong thing. I'll be better. And right. that goes such a long way because yeah. now they know you got they got your back.
Yeah.
You got yeah. theirs and they got yours. Cool. This guy is a foxhole type of guy. I'm with him. Mm-hmm. And he'll be willing to do the same for you. Hey, coach told me that's on me. The
yeah.
player will say that. And you're like, okay, now we got something.
It's funny. I once worked with a guy who will remain unnamed and the team will remain unnamed, but he would just flip every time the opposing team scored. He would just lose it. And we worked a little bit together defensively. And I tried to create some space in there for the fellas of we're going to live with this mm-hmm. right here. These couple things, whatever they are. It's good. If it's a tough post move over a really good wall up, we'll live with it, all right? If it's a challenge pull-up and guy hits a mid-range shot over our fingertips, all right, we'll live with it.
Yeah.
All right, here's what we don't want to live with. Anything easy, anything early, anything open. We're not living with those. But anything tough that's challenged, if they earn it, they're not going to do enough of that to beat us. And then when that would happen in film, you'd try to pop the balloon. Yeah, I try to pop the balloon before the other guy would say something. We'd be like, fellas, hey, remember we said we're going to live with that. And I think when they know that there's that feeling of either we own our mistakes or they've created this live with it space, like even offensively, swing, great shot, no problem.
Yeah.
That's what we want. And so I think those things help pop the pressure balloon in the room or on the court sometimes.
Yeah.
When it's really appropriate. And having that feel of knowing when to do that as coaches is a big deal.
I couldn't agree more. And I think for us, like we all played at some level, like you want to create an unanxious learning environment and you want them to be instinctual. So when they know exactly what you're looking for and that they're not going to get chewed out for that, whether the ball goes in or not on both sides, like that's a relief too, because the last thing we want to do for these high level athletes is make them overthink. Good shot, bad shot. Is this the right read? This and that. You want them to be instinctual. And we're on drop coverage on this side. We're icing here. We're hard heads. Like too much is going to create the confusion. And then you're taking away their best ability. And that's to just play basketball and be instinctual. So if they feel like they're going to walk into a film session, not, man, I'm going to get chewed out because I don't know if I did the right thing or not. It's gonna really be difficult to get their best level of play. So I think that's a great point too, when they're walking in there and they feel comfortable because they know you have their back. Hey, we're living with this. This is what we preach. It's okay.
Yeah.
This is part of our process. This is part of the big picture.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
No, that's a good point. When kids start, or players, athletes, I should say kids, because people in college now are like 26, 27 years old. They're as old as me now, so maybe we shouldn't say kids. But
guys are walking out with their newborns on senior day, man. Like,
buying strollers with NIL.
Yeah, got to. Exactly. All right, got but, Pamper deals. Pamper marketing got a deal with it.
when you say, hey, I don't want you shooting threes or something, or I don't want you shooting this particular shot, and a kid or and a player goes and still does it, it's like, it's in the back of their head. It really is. And if you yell at them and ream them out and you hear the buzzer every time and that kid just shot this shot and he comes out, that it plays with them. I've been on teams. I've seen kids. I've seen it so many times that now since I have played and been around it, I actually can start to notice it a little bit more. But if this kid's getting reamed at, yeah, maybe it's a bad shot. Maybe as a coach, you don't want him taking it, but cussing him out and screaming in front of everybody, making it a point, isn't going to help the situation. Maybe that's a conversation you have on the side. Now, if the kid continues to do that, that's a different story.
And for me, I think that that goes into play of, are you guys not understanding what we're looking for? And then as a coach, you got to look inward at first. Am I not delivering my message? Are you guys not absorbing it? Because if the mistakes continue to get repeated, maybe I'm doing a bad job. You say, hey, fellas, maybe I'm doing a bad job. Or maybe I'm not stressing it enough in our individual sessions. I'm not stressing it enough in our individual film. You're not getting these scenarios on the court. So I think as coaches, you got to have the patience to look inward and say, am I doing the best I can to teach this? And then if you feel like you are, then you're going to have some tough conversations. But I do believe that, again, we're building it from the ground up, and it starts a lot with player development. Are you having open and honest conversations with your player? You need to do this. This is what it's going to take for you to get on the floor. This is what it's going to take for you to stay on the floor. Listen, the head coach needs to win. We all need to win. So if you do that and you give us the best opportunity to get a W, you're going to play. So I think it all starts with, like, we're teachers at the end of the day. Are we delivering the message in a way where they can absorb it? Is what I'm doing working? Is it sticking? And again, then as the player, you got to listen to learn. If you keep on making the same mistake and you understand what we're saying, we have an open and honest conversation. Do you get what our goal is? You tell me yes, and then you're veering off. You're not listening to learn. You're just listening just to say, okay, let's get this. And let's just sweating a little bit. So I think it comes hand in hand, but it starts with who we are and what we're doing as teachers. Because at the end of the day, that's what we are at our core.
Yeah, no doubt, man. What was Matt Braze, assistant with the Sixers? And his grandfather was Lute Olson. And he was actually a GA on Lute Olson's staff when he first got started. And he said every day Lute Olson would tell the coaching staff, you haven't taught until they've learned.
I love that.
And so that's that ownership side of us, right? And having that teacher's mentality. And then also knowing your audience. There's certain guys or ladies that you can say things to a certain way. And it maybe doesn't have to be screaming and yelling, but it, maybe it's a kid that grew up raised by aunties and grandmothers and his mom. Mm-hmm. So he's going to handle it a little bit differently than a guy that's grew up with a dad that could bring the thunder and had the discipline. That's a different family dynamic, which is going to affect how they learn. It's going to affect how they're coached. It's going to affect how they react to things in front of the whole group. So I think knowing your audience when you build player relationship now more than ever, because the moment they show up June 15th or July 1st, that clock is ticking. And like in the same thing in the G League, October by Halloween,
here we go.
April 15th, it's all over. I think knowing our audience is a really big deal. But I love what you said there, us taking ownership as teachers. And don't be afraid to look at ourselves in the mirror. There is a I don't know and I don't care line that eventually that they are dancing on. But err on the side of the I don't know part before you jump to I don't care.
Yeah.
And listen, it's not easy. That stuff takes as much work as watching and breaking down the game from last night. And you got to go the extra mile. And again, we're talking about player development, like knowing your player at his core, knowing his background, like you said, raised by women or raised by a tough father or had coaching figures in his life that were a staple for him. Like all that stuff is really important. And if you're willing to do that, it's gonna create something special. You're going to get the full potential of that player. And you got to be willing to do it. Again, anything and everything, whatever you need. And sometimes it's just, hey, I got another funny story. I had a player, I won't name his name because just for whatever reasons.
He might be listening to this.
He liked to go get his nails on. He would go to the salon and get his nails on. And I never did that in my life. But that was going to create an environment where he was going to have his hair let down and relax, and I could have an open and honest conversation with him. I'm sitting there like this. The lady's going, what do you want? I go, I have no clue. Get me what he gets. But then for that 45 minutes, we were able to talk about life, family, and then he knew I was with him. He was very reserved, very guarded. He had so many people take advantage of him in his life and was not did not have his best interest. That 45 minutes got me so much further than anything that season. And I came away looking sharp.
Yeah, manicured up. I got back
to being able to get my nails done. But I'm telling you, it was really cool, and it opened my eyes to that my point I'm trying to make exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Morgan Freeman, obviously legendary actor, had a quote one time, and he said, always seek to understand before trying to be understood.
That's great.
And I think as coaches, that is a gem for all of us, right, is to take that first step. Instead of sitting back and I'm the coach, they're the player, they need to come to me. Yeah. That's literally what that means, right? Is we need to go first. We take that first step, whatever that is. Seek to understand.
Yeah.
Because in understanding, you'll get the chance to be understood by default.
Yeah.
No, I 100%. I love that because it one, what you did was you found a way to go down to his level, which a lot of people, and I'm going to assume a lot of people probably would never do that with your player, right? I'm going to assume that a lot of people wouldn't go to those lanes.
I don't even know if you have to assume. I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I'm sitting there going, I don't know. Whatever he gets, thankfully it was clear because I would have walked back in there with lime green. I had those guys looking at me like, what are we doing here? Right. I just come back from a rave. We play Windy City tomorrow. What's happening? And I'm like, listen, he's going to get us 30 tonight. Don't worry. We're good.
Yeah, that's right.
No, that's great. We appreciate you for sharing that because that's obviously
gold, man.
Be able to get your players' trust, respect, and be able to get closer to them. There's a variety of ways that you can do it. Getting your nails done is one. Being in the weight room early preseason with them is another way. Yeah. There's a bunch of ways you just got to find.
Going to a yoga class, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of ways. But that's great for people to know, especially they don't know. I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily know how to build the relationships with players, especially when you're an older figure. You're like when you're 5 years older than them, it's one thing because you can relate to them a little bit more. But give it 15, 20 years down the line, you're 20 years older than your players. How do you gain that respect?
Yeah,
there's a variety of ways, and that helps out a ton.
Yeah, no, you said it, man. It's find a way to be first and find a way to go first. And I don't know, they feel it. When you're just being authentic, even if it's a little messy sometimes, they would rather have authentic messy than measured fakeness. And their antennas are so good. We talk about it here all the time. Players' antennas are so good to pick up on that stuff. And authentic and messy is always going to win out in the long run, for sure.
Andrew, thank you again for having taken some time out of your day, being able to hop on with us. Obviously, it's great to be able to finally talk with you. I've heard your voice numerous times from the coffee, from all of your plays that you're writing up, the Coaches and Coffee podcast, seeing all these things all over social media. I've heard the voice more than enough, so it's great to be able to chat with you, learn your side of things and your experiences.
This was awesome. I really appreciate it. Again, I love what you guys are doing. This is what it's all about. We're here to serve our players. We're here to serve each other. And the second we lose sight of that, we're in the wrong business. So to be on this is an honor, and I don't take it lightly. So thank you for letting me share my story and a little bit of the craziness that I've been my 15-year coaching journey. So
you'll be doing 15 more. Just wait. There'll be more stories where that came from. When you start cracking 25, 30 years, there'll be stories galore. But no, man, thank you for jumping on. And again, Rising Coaches, we got better today with this. And something good's going to happen for you really soon. This business, just we can't have enough people that just care about players first and getting people better. And the idea of development and that constant improvement and having the right heart about things. Yeah. And you got the right heart, brother.
I appreciate that. That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it.
Thank you again. And for all of you out there listening to our voices, Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. As always, Alan Major and Doug Caputo, all you coaches, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.
Still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.